We have a caller at the 619 area code. Caller, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Good. You're on the air with Jerry Pippin and Rich Dolan.
Yes,
go ahead, caller.
And it's a pleasure. Thank you very much, and it's a pleasure to hear from you again, Jerry. I'll like to say thank you to Richard Dolan. If I am on the right show, I'm not sure. I'm sure I'm calling on distance right now. But the question I have concerning these UFO reports and information about the reports itself, I have a big question.
Mm-hmm.
Have anyone have heard anything about a mass abduction?
Well,
Lord, say that again. I didn't understand it. Rich probably got it, but ask that question again.
He said, has anyone heard of a mass abduction?
Okay.
And the answer is yes. There are a couple of cases where there have been apparent mass abductions, for sure. It depends on how many people you're talking to count as a mass abduction. The one that came to my mind immediately is one of the most famous events in UFO history, and that would be the Manhattan abduction of 1989, featuring a woman known as Linda Cortil. That's not her actual name. That's the name she goes by, which Bud Hopkins wrote about in his book called Witnessed. I actually did a little bit of some follow-up investigation of that case a few years ago, and I spoke with a few of the individuals who worked for the New York Post at that time as truck drivers. And keep in mind, this is a case in which everything was taking place at like 3 in the morning. So in downtown Manhattan, New York Post truck drivers are very busy picking up the post and getting ready to deliver it throughout the city. So a number of these guys were there when this event happened. And of course, it's also been rumored, and Bud Hopkins was never happy that I mentioned this in my book. And Bud and I were very, very good friends, but he didn't like the fact that I mentioned the fact that UN Secretary General Javier Perez de Cuellar was said to have himself been abducted during that event. And the point is that encounter, this is November 1989, was one that it certainly appears that there was a mass abduction. There were a number of people who were taken, not just the UN Secretary General, not just Linda Cortil, but I think at least one of the truck drivers that I spoke to, and probably a few others. There's another couple of cases that Bud investigated that I recall. I can't remember the details, but I know that we're talking about multiple people being abducted.
Well, sir, have you heard...
Go ahead, caller.
Yes, have you heard anything about any military involvement with these mass abductions at all? I mean, I heard a line concerning Fort Benning, Georgia, and I've been involved with this investigation for like 20 years, and I mentioned this mass abduction several times over with the panel and also a convention that I was involved with, and I visited your area once before, Mr. Dolan, and I really appreciated you're a very talented man, and I still want to continue with this inquiry about this mass abduction because of the fact that I did find some civil people. One of them, of course, passed away recently. His name was Command Sergeant Major James Thornton.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you've ever heard of him, but he was in the same area I was, and, of course, he passed away, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
However, I'm still continuing, like I said, to continue to find certain people that still are.
Well, let me answer your question on this. The incident at Fort Benning, I have that book. And in fact, I met the gentleman who co-authored that book a number of years ago. And it seems to me that could have happened. The issue is whether or not there's really enough evidence that's going to stand up to a really, really tough critical scrutiny. I have to say he made a good impression on me. This is a long time ago when I met him.
Rich, this is John Vasquez. He had a similar experience.
Exactly. This isn't John Vasquez calling.
Yes, Yeah, I'm John Vasquez. How are you,
John,
doing?
We met.
I'm sorry to interrupt you.
No, no problem. We met, I don't know if you remember, I met you at a conference close to 10 years ago.
Yes, I remember. I think it was in Lawson.
I didn't realize that this was you. I think that's right. And, well, I'm happy to tell you. You made a very, very positive impression on me, and I have your book. And, I mean, my feeling is that what you say sounds very credible to me. And the other thing that I would like to add is that in the subsequent years since you and I have met, I have investigated cases that I am convinced are military abductions. I'm not saying abductions of military personnel. I'm saying abductions by some kind of deep, super deep black ops group that's human, not ET. I am personally convinced that this goes on. And, you know, figuring out the relationship of those abductors as opposed to ET abductors is something that is high on my
mind. Yeah, I think it's really difficult. Hey, John, we've got to move on. I'm going to ask him one other question for you.
Okay.
Thanks for calling in.
Yeah.
How's the weather out in San Diego?
Oh, beautiful.
Okay.
Listen,
I'm going to ask Rich another question here. Thanks for calling, John. Rich, how do we know that John's a very serious guy, but how do we know that this is not some sort of MK Ultra experiment?
Well,
I don't guess we can.
It's hard sometimes. You know, the human mind and human memory, unfortunately, can be manipulated. There are chemicals, there's techniques, there's hypnosis. There are things that can be done to take a person and inhibit their formation of memories while they're being taken. So, in other words, a person can remain conscious during an abduction, but then be brought back and not have a good or even any memory sometimes of what happened. Or if they have a memory, it's fuzzy, or they wonder if it was a dream, and, you know, whatever. They sleep a little late that next morning, and they're groggy, and the next thing you know, they're cooking meals for the kids and getting on with their life. In that type of a situation, who knows? Is it a human situation or is it a non-human situation? I can tell you, Jerry, I've spoken to a number of people now. I look for them, to be honest with you, and I almost feel like I know what to look for. Individuals who have been taken by U.S. deep black ops. I didn't even call it U.S. military, because I don't really think that this is an official part of the U.S. military. I think it's beyond military. And I think that there are certain markers about these people, and I'll just throw this right out there. I haven't written about this in any article, and undoubtedly I'm going to catch hell from certain people because they just don't believe that this is valid. But I believe that there are people of let's call it psychic abilities who are of interest to both human and non-human groups. And this is one important reason why they're being taken. You know, Bud Hopkins, when he was alive, used to mention that, you know, certain people appeared to be singled out for abduction. But he didn't really get into why this was the case. But I believe that one of the key reasons has to do with, I think everyone is born with some level of what we would call psychic ability, but not all in equal amounts. It's like with any other kind of skill, whether it's musical ability or sports or what have you. We all may have some, but some people are very gifted and others less gifted. And I think it's the same with this, and that these people are of interest. And look, if you go through the history of UFO encounters, you find again and again and again kind of a telepathic connection that people have said that they have. And not simply people who claim that they've been channeling ET entities. I'm talking about witnesses of UFOs who somehow these other entities get into their head in one form or another. They react in ways emotionally that seem out of character for the situation, either unusually calmly, ridiculously calmly, or, on the other hand, just over-the-top hysterical. You get both of these. And you get a lot of cases of what appears to be kind of a mental imagery that people have gotten. So there's a non-physical element to the interactions that people have with these other beings, and it's my opinion that they are interested in some humans who have got strong capabilities in that area. And I also believe this is one reason why the human black ops are also taking some of these people for the same reason.
You know, Richard, one of the common denominators I've found over the years with abductees or people who have been taken is they're much like John and many others. They just, it compels them. It's kind of like you and I when we suddenly got turned on UFOs, you know. All of a sudden, it's no longer an interest. It's a compulsion.
That's right.
They get people to believe them. And maybe this is one of the reasons there is a UFO cover-up. Do you think there's something? What do you think is really going on with abductions?
Well, a couple of things. One is there's no question in my mind that there's a breeding program going on of some sort. I think the evidence for this is overwhelming, at least in terms of witness testimony, abductee testimony. You get this from every single, especially the female abductees, who talk again and again about having been impregnated and having had their babies taken away again and again and again. It's just too much. So humans are being bred. Now, whether that's human ET hybrid or humans with other humans is a good question. I believe that there's both involved. Humans being bred with other humans who have the right lineage, whatever that lineage happens to be. And the only reason I say this is because I think I've stumbled onto a couple of those types of cases. So there's a breeding program. Now, what else might there be? Well, if my idea of people with psychic abilities are being taken is true, then I think that what's happened is that these people of psychic abilities are being used. They're being put to work in one form or another by ET, and especially by human black ops, clandestine groups, which are using these people basically, I would say, as counterintelligence, lack of a better word, to do remote viewing, to learn what they can learn about the nature of some of these other beings, which the impression that I get still mystifies a lot of the black ops. I don't think they really know everything that we think they may know. And part of what they do is use human telepaths, essentially, as part of their overall mission. Now, maybe there may be even more than this involved. I mean, I've had hints here and there that it's more than simply seeing across space, but across time. And anyone who's looked into the remote viewing phenomenon knows that there are many cases where it appears that remote viewers have seen events that have occurred in a different time stream or at a different time. And I think this is what's happening here.
Yeah, this abductee issue, every time I bring it up in a show that's live, the interest explodes. I have four or five emails here, two or three people in the chat room all of a sudden asking questions. And they basically are in two frames of mind. One is that abductees become very intuitive and spiritual healers, for lack of a better way to term. And others seem to think that it's some sort of a mental illness.
Well,
you know, I think, you know, for many years people didn't, Richard, do many shows on abductions because we just didn't understand it. And that's where this mental illness thing comes along.
Well, I have to say, one thing that happens to some abductees is they don't all become spiritually healthy and whole. I think the abduction phenomenon does harm to some of these people. Again, not everyone is the same, and not everyone has, a granite strong psychological foundation to start with. But some people who are taken are more vulnerable than others. I have spoken to quite a few people at this point, I can say, who I feel that the abduction experiences have not been helpful for them in their life, and they probably would be happier people without knowing what's been going on to them. But they don't have that luxury. So you know, it can be an avenue for spiritual growth, as any kind of difficulty in life can be, of course, not simply to do with ET and abduction, but really it's possible to use anything in life as an avenue for spiritual growth. But not everyone surmounts the difficulties. There are things that happen during some of the experiences, at least I've looked into, that are genuinely distressing, that are not nice, you know, cases that I would consider be essentially tantamount to rape have occurred, and various types of violence, whether sexual or non-sexual, and they're just unpleasant. So what does one say about it? You know, we're not all dealing with beings of lightness and goodness. I hate to say it, but at least my own sense is that there's a darker element that does exist in this phenomenon. And whenever I encounter individuals who only really see this positive, and they say things like, the good-bad dichotomy is a false dichotomy, and, you know, you're creating negativity. All I want to say is I don't think these people have really done a whole lot of research. Because if you do enough research, you find that there is a disturbing as well as a positive element of this. My sense is that we're dealing with a complex reality. And if you look around at humanity, there's 7 billion of us now on planet Earth, and there are wonderful human beings who are saint-like and beautiful people, and then there are sadists and horrible people. Really, why should we think that entities that may have been around a little longer and have a little more scientific knowledge than we do, why should we think it would be any different? Why would we think that some aren't frivolous? Why would we think that some aren't actual, waste of space in their own terms, and whereas others might be genuinely spiritually advanced? So I think this is the same with them as it is for us.
Yeah, when you're asking some questions, rhetorical questions, I've got a question for you right now. We talk about you deal with this in your books and your subject matter a lot, and that's the UFO cover-up.
Mm-hmm.
Why are they covering it up? What's the big damn deal?
A lot of reasons. One way to do this helpfully is to just rewind the clock, and let's all take a trip back to the 1940s. So 1945, World War II ends, and the entire world is basically lying on its back trying to recover from really the most convulsing cataclysm in modern history. Millions of people dead, millions more homeless. Europe was on the brink of starvation. People forget this. Much of Asia was in the midst of starvation. This was a really precarious situation, and it's in the immediate aftermath of that this new phenomenon now appears. In the early stages of the Cold War, you got the Soviet Union. Americans were kind of feeling that whole thing out. And now there are these objects that are being seen by entities and agencies unknown that appeared to have extraordinary capabilities, vastly beyond that of the U.S. Air Force. Now, just think about this. If you're the president and you're faced with a situation where the entire population only wants to return to a situation of normalcy, and now you're going to lay this down on them when you yourself don't really know what you're dealing with. And on top of that, to make it even more of a reason for secrecy, what if you've recovered some of their technology, as in Roswell or perhaps elsewhere? So it's not simply alerting the world to the presence of these other beings, but alerting the world to the fact that you've actually got some of their technology. And if you tell the world you got that, it's going to be mighty hard not to share it eventually with other groups, other nations like the Soviet Union or like any other country that you are not sure you want to share this with. After all, the United States at that point had a monopoly of the atomic bomb, and they didn't want to share that technology with other nations. Why would they want to share something as exotic as this? So I think the answer is they wouldn't. I think the answer is Truman and his people would create a very, very highly classified group of top-level people, and their job would be to figure all of this out, to understand just what are we dealing with? What is this technology? Can we exploit it? Can we make money off of it? Can we use it to improve our military? You know, whatever. How bad would public panic be? You'd have someone, that's his job, he'd have to figure that out. Who's going to manage the media and the academic communities, and who's on point for that? And then we'll review this every so often and decide what our game plan will be. And I think that's exactly what they did. We can call that MJ-12 or Majestic 12. I think that's what they did. And then the problem becomes the secret continues more and more years. And secrets, you see, they have their own momentum. They develop their own raison d'etre, their own reason to be, in which and their own profit. Because ultimately what will happen, I'm sure, is that the technology gets studied in deep, deeply clandestine facilities, private industry, and eventually people start getting nifty ideas on how to develop our own technology based on what they're looking at. So now they've got a goose that's laying golden eggs for them. They have now zero incentive for letting the rest of the world know, because you've got this technology of the future in your own hands. Why would they possibly want to tell the world about it? And so it just goes deeper and deeper and deeper. And what eventually happens is that this clandestine world, I think, ends up leaping so far ahead of the rest of the world in terms of what it knows, that it almost becomes a real difficult matter for even those who may want to bring the rest of us up to speed, but they're dealing with realities. They're dealing with science and cosmology and entities that essentially qualify them as a separate civilization. And I've called it sometimes a breakaway civilization, one that's broken away from our own to a large extent. So I think what's happened with the secrecy is that it's developed its own power, its own momentum. And it's very difficult for them to, I think, want to break out of that. In fact, it's my opinion that they never will do this voluntarily, but that nonetheless, see, they're not the only game in town, the secret keepers. There's these other beings, let's not forget them. And then the real dynamic of the equation, I would say, is us, the people. We're living in a society that is going through technological revolutions. Think about where we've gone just in the last 20 years. It's extraordinary. We're obviously not going to stop in the year 2012. We're going to continue. And what will our technology, what will our social communication abilities be like in another decade or two? It's almost impossible to imagine. I think what's going to happen is all of these developments, including stronger computing, stronger artificial intelligence in our personal computers and all of these things, are going to be the game changer. And they're going to force open this secret, so that the secret keepers are going to be, they're going to be forced to acknowledge something, and then of course they're going to give all the spin that they can give on it. And that's really where the fight for disclosure begins, not ends. You know, with an acknowledgement that there's something going on, we're going to have to continue to fight, guaranteed on this, to get actual truth, because you can be sure that when there's a disclosure, there's going to be a fair amount of untruth packaged in with any truths we may get.
A political Mr. Dolan is our guest here, and we only have about 5 minutes left with Richard. And but before I let you go, Richard, I got to ask you a couple of questions here. We're talking about Stephenville, and you just did something with Peter Robbins in Philadelphia, and he had the UK incident. And then we mentioned Area 51 earlier. Which one of these UFO stories fascinates you the most, or are they all pretty equal?
Well, the one that Peter wrote about, of course, the Rendlesham Forest case or the Bentwaters case from 1980s, is one of the most important UFO cases ever, for a whole lot of reasons, more to go into than probably have time for. But I would rank the Stephenville case as right up there. I think in terms of evidence, it might be the best case of the 21st century so far, at least the best American case. The reason I say that is not simply the number of witnesses and the quality of those witnesses, but also the possession of FAA radar data. This was a real score by MUFON, and the investigators looking into it. In other words, getting confirmation by the Federal Aviation Administration that there was indeed an unknown object tracked over that area in Central Texas at that time. And that's critically important, because what you had from the witnesses is that there is this object that was as big as a Walmart. In fact, one person described it as a flying Walmart. That's about the scariest description I could imagine. When Walmarts fly, I'm out of this country. And it was this huge thing being chased by a whole bunch of F-16s. Now, the Air Force initially denied everything. They eventually admitted that, yes, there were some F-16s out on a training mission. They've never acknowledged that there was a UFO. But here's the thing. The FAA data did acknowledge that there was a UFO in that area. And the most critically intriguing thing about that, and this still blows my mind to this day, is that the last direction that object was seen going off to was the Crawford Ranch, which is where then-President Bush was staying at that time. And then the FAA said, well, we have no records after this. And I'm like, yeah, sure. How are you not going to have records on your, of this enormous, gargantuan object in the sky that outperforms F-16s, by the way, headed toward where the president was at that time? And you're going to tell us you don't have anything. Well,
okay,
to me,
Richard,
that's incredible.
But for a while, I'll let you go. How's the publishing business?
Well, I'm very happy with it. I've got a couple of books, not simply by myself. I mentioned UFOs for the 21st Century Mind, but I'm looking into publishing two books right now by other authors in the field. And as soon as we nail that down, I'll probably be talking more about it. But I'm very, very happy about it. I enjoy being a small-time publisher in this field. My biggest concern is always being able to do justice to the authors who entrust me with their book. I'm the publisher of a book by Dr. Richard Sauter, who writes on underground bases.
He seems to have gone to South America.
Yeah, he likes it there. I correspond with him pretty regularly. He's I think happily, for at least now, as an American expat. South America seems to agree with him, I guess.
Richard Dolan, it's always a pleasure having you on.
Oh, Jerry, I enjoyed our chat. It was a lot of fun, as it always is. Thank you.
And we'll talk to you again soon.
I hope so. I'll enjoy it, I'm sure. Thanks.
Richard Dolan was our guest.
I'm Jerry Pippin. Thanks for listening, everyone. Until next time, cheers.